It's referees and walking canes. It's the outdated wrestling hour once again.
Allentown, Pennsylvania. This is the newest edition of the Outdated Wrestling Hour with Bob Smith. That's me, formerly with Pro Wrestling Illustrated, formerly with a bunch of other magazines, and soon to be of a second podcast. Actually, it should be out right about now. We've just started the Outdated Entertainment Hour podcast. Look for that if you're in the mood to talk about entertainment, TV, radio, all that kind of stuff, comedy, you name it. It's going to be a second Bob Smith production. Well, in any event, back to wrestling and back to, I want to give a little more hype to a really great book called Run with the Bulls. You know, Eric Johnson's a one-of-a-kind comedian, and he had a one-of-a-kind granddad and father who were both professional wrestlers, as we've talked about in a previous episode. Well, I talked to Greg Oliver about the book once on the show, and now we have Joseph Cachado is here. And we're going to talk about his participation in the book and his life in wrestling. That'll be really interesting. But I also have something here to talk about. I notice in a lot of other wrestling podcasts that people read letters from the people who listen to the show. This one really touched me, and I want to read this to you. Okay, I received this letter from Mr. Ian Ross. It says, "Hello, Mr. Smith. I hope this email finds you well, maybe even after bowling." He really listens to the show, doesn't he? I continue with Ian's words. "I don't mean to take up too much time here, but I wanted to tell you something first and then ask a question that I honestly think you haven't been asked by anyone and show you how big a fan of the Western Magazine nerd that I am. My name is Ian Ross. I've been watching wrestling since November 1984. I even met my former wife at an ECW show. My son is named Owen for Owen Hart. Was the star of my favorite TV show as a kid, TSN Wrestling, Stampede. When I was a kid, I had a paper route, so I had a disposable income. I would take a bus to the newsstand at downtown Windsor, Ontario monthly so I could grab the newest wrestling magazines of all kinds. The Western magazines, Wrestling Eye, Wrestling Fury, that one was a bit rough, etc. My memories are clear from those days. Unfortunately, after a few falls induced by seizures and a major accident, my memories can be scattered, but I hold those strong to me. I'm on disability, so I have ample time to myself. One thing that helps my head a lot has been running. While running, I also listen to podcasts. Late last year, while reading a Steve Generelli post on a message board, he said he'd done an episode with you and to look for it. At this point, I found your show and an archive of almost a full year of shows. That episode and subsequent run triggered memories and good feelings. So the next day, I started with your first episode, listened to a new one each day on my runs, until I was caught up. It took, I think, until January, February of this year, but each episode I thought had different thoughts and questions. Thank you for helping to trigger all of that for me. Anytime you look at your microphone and don't feel it, or wonder who's out there, I would just like to tell you that I am. That 13-year-old kid who read The Steel Cage with Bob Smith on the bus home from the newsstand, and now the old person with memory issues, head damage, and sometimes a feeling that there is nothing out there for him anymore. That person is there, looking forward to hearing from you. Thank you for that. My question, if I may ask, is this, and I hope maybe if you hadn't recorded the next episode with Craig Peters, he may know if you don't. And I can't possibly imagine anyone else that has asked you this because only my brain would care about something like this, so here goes. There was an ad in, I want to say, every issue of PWI that I purchased. Maybe it was in the other Western magazines too, but I don't remember. But definitely PWI. It was, I think, a full-page ad, and it was telling me that I could be on the cover of my own issue of PWI. That sample cover even had its own sub-headlines that were unique to that particular cover. All you had to do was submit a picture of yourself, and I presume you would receive your copy of you on the cover of PWI in the mail. My question is two parts. Was there an actual magazine you received with your photo on the cover, with features and articles in the magazine? And part two, do you know how many people sent for this? Was it a moneymaker? If so, did it drive the design team crazy? Every time I'd see that ad, I always wondered if anybody actually went through with it. I'm sorry this is long, Mr. Smith. Thank you for reading it. I hope at least my question made you scratch your head and wonder how anyone on Earth would remember that. But after hearing all of your episodes, I wanted to ask you the most outdated of outdated question that I could. Thank you for your time, Ian. Ian, I don't know what to say. Much like Jim Cornette, who gets on his podcast letters from people who have been a little bit down on their luck, as you have. Well, well. This is the greatest letter I ever received. I really mean that. I get tons of stuff in my mailbox, and I try to answer most of it, if it's, you know, prescient to do so. Sometimes I get so busy, it takes me a couple of weeks to get back to people, but I try to get back to people in the outdatedwrestling@gmail.com mailbox. You really touched me with this, Ian. Because, you know, before you were the kid on the bus reading The Steel Cage, I was a kid stuffing some wrestling magazine into my school bag, reading the Kitzer books and the Weston magazines, as much wrestling as I could get my hands on. Something about those wrestling magazines kind of ties us all together. Whether you're a professional wrestler or way down to people like you and me who were simply fans. And I just want to thank you for listening. Immensely, I want to thank you. It's a privilege to be able to talk to people like you, and I hope someday I get to tell you that in person, some way, somehow. But for now, I just want to give you my sincere gratitude for writing such a wonderful letter. It makes the whole job worthwhile, and yes, you inspired me. You inspired me to start a second podcast. So, thank you. I know there's a lot of people out there that listen from all over the world at this point, and the fact that I've come even this far is kind of miraculous in and of itself. But Ian, with every new show, I'll think about you, my man. Hope that you're feeling well and that you're enjoying every episode. I don't know what else to say, but thank you. So with that, let's take a little commercial break and go up to the Great White North, a wonderful country of Canada with Joseph Cachado, and he's going to tell us how he got involved with one of the year's best wrestling books, which you really need to check out, Run with the Bulls. And you also need to check out Eric Johnston's comedy. And you need to check out this interview with Joseph. So we'll be back in a few minutes. Here's a word. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Wrestling Fans International Association is back. That's right, the premier fan club association of the 1970s and 1980s has been revived and is back in business. Join today. It's free at thewfia.org. That's thewfia.org. You can also join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/WFIA1969.
All right, it was about 4 or 5 episodes ago that we had Eric Johnston on, the author of the brand new book, Run with the Bulls, 3 Generations of Sports and Entertainment, and Greg Oliver worked with him on that. But there was a third name on that book cover, and I got interested in that. And his name is our guest today. He's a young man just getting started in his journalism career, but you can already read some of his work on Slam Wrestling, which is the finest wrestling news website out there. I say that without reservation. I talked to Greg about the site, and I talked to him about you a little bit, and I'm glad to have you on the show. Folks, this is Joseph Cachado. Did I say that right?
You did. Perfect.
I got it right. Yeah. Welcome to the show, and congratulations on the book. Is this your first book assignment?
It is my very first book, yes.
Wow, that's great. You got to work with Greg Oliver on a wrestling book. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's like a dream come true for a wrestling fan.
Now, I'm speaking to you from the Great White North. Now, you're Canadian.
I am, yes.
Okay, and that's where Slam Wrestling is located, obviously. And how's that experience been? Because I really meant that, and I say it all the time. Slam is the that's the standard for wrestling news, in my mind anyway. Were you a fan of it? How'd you hook up with Slam?
So I've always like followed their work in the past. Like they've always had something that I remember as a kid was the Canadian Hall of Fame page that they have where they Canadian wrestlers. And then it just so happened that I stumbled upon them a couple years ago when I wrote a story about Smash Wrestling. And like you said, it really is the standard bearer. We, Greg, John, and Bob, those are the three gentlemen that run the site. And they've always taught us that it's proper journalism at the end of the day. Even though it's wrestling, it can be funny at times and a little bit crazy. Proper journalism is like what we go for with Slam. And I think they taught me a lot. I've been able to cover shows live. I cover Monday Night Raw weekly. I've written stories about some of the smallest indie, like small indie shows, small indie wrestlers that they don't know about. And I've also done stories about more mainstream people. Like I've interviewed Alex Riley, the WWE star that made his return to wrestling a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. I did Angelina Love with TNA. So there's been a lot of opportunities there. And yeah, I thank Slam for a lot of that.
Oh, that's great. You know, you brought up a bell with me because it's like, I worked in the newspaper world before I joined PWI, which is the first national magazine I ever worked for. And it was the same with Craig Peters, journalism with a capital J. And that, believe it or not, even though they were wrestling magazines, it's like you say, people go, oh, it's wrestling. But, you know, he was a stickler for good grammar. And so was Stu Sachs, the editor-in-chief, was sticklers for, you know, a lot of our staffers were from local newspapers. I mean, big newspapers like Newsday and stuff like that. So even though it was a wrestling magazine, you couldn't hand in copy that was like messy or juvenile or not having real editorial standards. And apparently you feel that way too. And so does your company.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to have a good journalism standard. Like from when I started there to now, I feel like Greg was the one that really helped me at the beginning. And he really taught me how to create a clean copy of work. And then later on, he trusted me to even edit some work myself, and I used what he taught me to edit other people's work. And I feel like as a whole, like we have a good record with as a company at Slam.
Absolutely, you do. You know, it's funny too. I won't say where this was, but about 3 years ago, I got offered a job on one of the a pretty well-known wrestling website, and it was that SEO stuff, and I just said no. I can't cotton to it. After decades of learning how to write and edit, I just couldn't. First of all, I'm too lazy to learn something new at this point. That's it. I've done my thing, you know. But seriously, I can't. To me, writing isn't about selling stuff, and I think that's what SEO is. I stuck to my guns and said no. I just can't do it. How do you feel about that stuff?
Yeah, I agree. I think writing, it shouldn't be about selling stuff. I think it should be like a direct. I think news is news, and when you need, there's something that needs to be shared. I think it's a proper way to do it, and I don't think there should be. I don't think journalism, like there has a place for like messiness and like adding details that are necessary. The way when I think of news, I think of a clean copy, like straight to the point, cut and paste, like exactly what the people need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You use one of my favorite expressions, clean copy. I edited other writers' work at, you know, my whole life, and I love turning around going, hey, that's good, clean copy. You know, so it's like, you know, it's always a pleasure to read something that's well put together. So
absolutely.
But, you know, as an editor, I used to enjoy taking a mess and making chicken salad out of it. You know what I'm saying? It's like something that's really bad grammatically and pretty poorly written, and then editing it into something that's good. I had a writer who, I did an entertainment magazine for 17 years. And I had a writer who, well, knew everything on a certain topic, but he couldn't write all that well. And I didn't care because what he was giving me was so interesting that I would shape it and turn it into really good columns because he had really good information. Have you ever had a job like that where you had to take fragments of things here and there and make something out of it?
Absolutely. I think we had a feature story at Slam, like about a couple years ago. We did it and put it together. Me and Greg worked on it together. Someone wrote it. He had a lot of great information. It was about a wrestler from way back. I think he was a wrestler from the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And me and Greg worked together to kind of, he had such a great idea. It didn't, I don't think he came together the way he expected, but with our help with him, we helped him. We created such an amazing story. And I think at Slam, it was one of our top rated stories for like quite a few weeks.
Really?
Yeah, it came out really well. It was a great feature.
Wow. Now, how do you, let me ask you some wrestling. How do you send one of our top rated stories for weeks? How do you determine that?
Actually, so Greg actually handles all of that. He handles the, he follows to see who's, what stories are being the most viewed, what's getting the most clicked. Every Monday, the Slam team, we all chat over an email chain. We hear about the top, it's about the top 20 stories for the week that passed. So that's how we discuss it. Greg checks like viewership, which one got the most clicks, clicks from Google, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Wow. I'm just such an admirer of Slam. You know, everything from the great photos of certain events, and I hate to say this, the obits are always really well done. And, you know, the up-to-the-minute news, again, it's the thinking person's wrestling website. That's the best way to put that.
It is.
You know, it's a very mature wrestling website as opposed to a lot of the others.
The obits, yeah, like that was one when I started doing my, when I did my internship, it was with Slam as well. And writing an obit was something I had never done before. So I wasn't sure how to do it. And like, I don't know, it's weird to do it in a tasteful manner. I would say you want to make sure you respect the wrestler, respect the person in wrestling, and just write it in a way that comes together. And Greg really helped me with the obits. And I wrote an obit. One of the ones that I remember specifically was about he was a wrestling fan from DCW. And he became notorious because they called him Piss Jug Mike, because he carried around a tea and a jug and looked like this. So they called him Piss Jug. Passed away back in 2022. He's really young, but I put together that obit and it came together so well because this fan touched so many like wrestlers. He had such deep connections. Like Matt Cardona left a post about it. So many people that he touched over the years. And that obit really sticks to me because I remember it came together like way better than I ever expected. When I heard the story, I was like, this fan, like this weird name, like what's happening with this? But it was came together really well. Probably my favorite obit. I don't want to say favorite, it's not a good way to put it, but one of them I enjoyed putting together.
Right.
I think we did a good job covering him.
So who else have you written about on the Slam Wrestling website?
Oh, so I've done a ton of stuff. So I've done an obit for the Bushwhacker that passed away. I do a lot of features on indie wrestling. I did that way before, like while I was still in university. I had a lot more free time before I started working full time, but I should do my features. The first one I ever did was on a wrestler from Winnipeg, Manitoba. His name was Sammy Peppers. He was a teacher by day and an independent wrestler over the weekend.
Okay.
And he was a tag team champion. I wrote that story. I recently did one of the more recent ones I did was on Cody Chun. He's a wrestler in the States. He does a lot of work at Defy. And he was one of the greatest interviews I did because he had a true passion for the wrestling business. Like this, he knew this is what he wanted to do for a long time. And he put so much work into it, and just talking to him, the way he studied the craft. And it was great to hear that. He had a big inspiration from Japanese wrestling. And that's one of the main things I cover over at Slam as well, New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I cover a lot of their shows, me and John Powell. We do a lot of work together on that with New Japan. And New Japan and WWE are probably the two closest companies I cover like at this point.
Well, you're doing way more than I would suspect a man your age would do. That's great. You know, talking to Eric Johnson about the new book, and I want to mention the name of the book again. It's called Rome the Bulls, Three Generations of Sports and Entertainment, which Joseph here is, I don't know how to put your, I guess, co-author, I guess. Is that fair?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, that's what Eric said, yeah, as well, and Greg.
Oh, yeah. He had nice things to say about you. He really did. And he said he enjoyed working with both of you. And how was that experience for you? I mean, you're so young, and yet you're writing an article ostensibly about two older wrestlers who are long passed away. So that had to be somewhat challenging, I would imagine.
It was challenging in a sense, but it was also, I really enjoyed it. And in the whole process, like I got to learn so much about the Ontario wrestling scene that I never really knew, because growing up, I heard my grandfather would talk about it. My dad would talk about like the independent wrestling shows that would come across like Toronto. But I actually got to deep dive into it and learn so much about that Ontario wrestling scene that I found it so cool. Like I got to interview so many great names like that were connected with Bullwhip. Like Harry D told us about the shows they would help run, the referee from, he works in TNA, he's done a few other jobs as well. I interviewed Brian Cashman. His dad was a referee as well. Brian Casebo, I believe his name was. And yeah, so I interviewed him. So I got to learn so much about the Ontario wrestling scene. And it was so cool because it was things that I never knew about and like how much independent wrestling ran through Toronto, Hamilton, Buffalo. It was amazing to learn so much about.
Yeah, I mean, for us down here in the lower 48, as it were, people here also don't realize the vibrant wrestling scene in Canada. Alex Robertson, who used to also work with the Slam, I don't know if she's still contributing. Is she?
I believe she does some things. Yeah, some things I do believe she still does. I've heard, I've seen it a few times, yes.
Yeah, she used to clue me in on all the indie stuff that was going up in there. I was really impressed. And it was good quality wrestling, too. I mean, it was kind of had an old school flavor to it. It wasn't hardcore or anything like that, but it had that modern vibe to it. She really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think it does have an independent scene that doesn't get talked about enough. Like, there's some great shows that happen here. I recently went to a Demand Lucha show, and I thought it was really well put together. It was, they build up, one thing about that independent company that I really like is that they build up their champions. They've had like three world champions that have had reigns that lasted a long time, and they put on great matches. They made that championship feel so important. So I was there at Parkdale Hall on Queen Street when his name, Jack Cartwheel, won the championship from Gringo Loco after Gringo Loco held the title for over a year. And even though it's just a small independent show, the roof practically came off the place when he won the title, because it was like someone finally beat Gringo Loco. And it was just amazing to see that independent wrestling can become that, people become that connected to it.
Wrestling's hot right now. I think it's hot on all levels.
I agree.
I mean, we just had that massive WrestleMania in Philadelphia, but what I'm finding out through that is that there were peripheral events around Philadelphia that were indies, and they all did great that weekend.
Yes.
I mean, everything was full, everything was packed. But I think people are really enjoying wrestling right now. Why do you think that is? I have my own philosophy on that, but why do you think everything's so hot right now?
You know, I feel like it's just been such great product, but I wonder, like, I wonder myself why it became so popular again, it feels. I feel like so many people are watching wrestling again, but I feel like the product's at an all-time high right now, and I feel like a big thing is it's been focused really on storytelling recently, which WWE, someone like company like that, they've always prided themselves on the storytelling, but I feel like there's been history in the past, people aren't always satisfied with the match at the end because they, maybe the match quality doesn't meet the storytelling quality. But I think recently we're reaching a point where the storytelling is and match quality is top notch all around. In great promo work, you're seeing great builds. Like, I think the Cody Rhodes build to WrestleMania win was so perfectly done. And people might have been upset when he lost last year, when seeing what it came to this year, I feel like it made it so much more special. I do think some companies still, like, I think it's hot, but I think there's still some certain companies that I don't know, like, I'm not sold on completely yet. Like, I still have my questions about AEW.
Oh gosh, me too. But we'll get into that a little bit.
But I do think it's hot because, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think storytelling, like the way wrestlers are being built now, is just so much more intriguing than in the past. And I think that's what draws people in so much more. Like, I have friends that haven't watched wrestling in years since they were a kid, but when they're on TV, they see this Cody Rhodes underdog strap against the heel Rock on Twitter posting these videos. Like, they were drawn back in. Like, I had friends that watched WrestleMania for the first time in years just because the way it's been documented and the stories, like, drew them back in.
But there's a believability factor right now that we haven't seen in a long time.
Yes, definitely.
And I think they're building it up by toning it down, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If things got really over the top in the pandemic eras, 20 and 21, because they were desperate, there are no fans there, and they put on, like, the cinematic matches and Bray Wyatt being set on fire. Just go down the list. Matt Hardy levitating into the ring on AEW. There's a lot of just desperation. It felt desperate.
I agree.
Because the business was bad because there was no business. So I think it took some time to calm down after that. You know, I think cinematic matches are already passe. I think it's time for a little grit, a little realism. Like they said at the end of WrestleMania, Michael Cole says, "I love pro wrestling." The words pro wrestling haven't been used in that program in probably in 10 years.
Yeah, it's been so a long
There was a meaning behind that, I think. And it made me excited because it's like, I think everybody that was there loves pro wrestling too. Exactly. And that's what they call it.
Definitely. I think, like, even just in WWE specifically, with that whole storyline with The Rock, I think it just added so much. Like, I had this conversation with someone a couple weeks ago, like, about how things like The Rock swearing on TV. People might not have liked it, but it just, I think it worked just because he was the only one doing it, and it made him like so much more of a bad guy, and it adds that realism almost to it. It makes you want to boo him. And I think they've just been doing a great job with that. Just kind of going back to like I wouldn't say it's not an attitude era level. I don't think it'll ever be like that again, but just letting him kind of have more creative freedom when it comes to promos, things like that. I think it's been adding a lot to the product.
I agree. I do agree. Mm-hmm. And you know what I think a real turning point was in the promotion was that boxing like press conference they had. There were no matches. You remember the thing on Peacock? It was just a press conference.
Yes.
Big blown up 5,000 people there press conference. That worked like gold.
Oh, people! It was in the. They had people in the palm of their hands that night. I think
they really did, didn't they? I mean, I never saw anything quite like it in wrestling, and I thought it was a real turning point for WWE. Just that special. Exactly. Because it was fresh, it was new, it looked gorgeous. I mean, and there's another thing with WWE. If you've noticed, their camera work is getting more advanced. The things they're doing with pacing and timing is changing. Following wrestlers in from outside the arena into the arena, or following from backstage with a single camera all the way back into the ring,
yeah,
as if you're walking the tunnel. The stuff has been very vibrant, really good looking.
I'm sure you saw the Sami Zayn entrance from Raw this past week.
No, I didn't see it this week.
I think so. And a lot of people are like, I've seen saying it. I think it was the best entrance in Monday Night Raw history.
Really?
They followed, the match ended prior to him. Jey Uso had a promo. They followed Jey Uso out of the arena outside the Bell Center in Montreal. And they find Sami Zayn standing on the street looking at the sign. And they had one camera that followed Sami saying he's going to come back in the building he started in. His hometown, they followed him through the crowd, through the fans, and they walked him all the way down the stairs with one camera into the crowd. He went through the whole arena with a Canadian flag on his back. And just the camera work was unreal. To follow him from outside on the sidewalk all the way in the ring was impeccable.
Oh, thank goodness for my DVR, man. I had to miss it because I was doing another interview that night. But it's like, I'm definitely going to, once I get home, I'm going to check that out because that sounds great. You see what I mean? There is real thought being put into it. And yet it seems more realistic, the fancier it looks. I've never seen anything quite like what's going on now.
I agree. Yeah. It's something
like I said, the cinematic matches just struck me as hokey and fake. Nothing with this new way of presenting it visually seems fake.
I agree.
It just seems realistic. It's just another way of looking at things. It's been really exciting the last couple of months. It really has.
Definitely.
But I do want people to go out and get the book. It's called Run with the Bull.
Yes.
Greg Oliver's name is on it. Joseph's name is on it. Of course, Eric Johnston, he is a bundle of energy and a load of laughs, and I like the fact that he has no off switch. He's very funny. I mean, what was it like working with him?
Oh, he's hilarious. I personally did a lot of writing about Eric. So I sat on the phone with him like a couple hours at a time, multiple times. And he really is just like, I think he's just like a naturally like loud personality, but he's hilarious. He he doesn't really have an off switch. And like his personality is just, it makes you happy when you're talking to him because he's just so excited about everything. And it's just such a great personality to have.
It really is. You know, he's funny. He's not grating at all, though. He's loud, but he's not grating. He walks that tightrope really well.
Yeah, he does.
Like, there are some comics that are just, hey, and they scream and, and they have to curse constantly.
Yeah.
Eric's not like that. He's a little more subtle. He does great slice of life comedy, too. Did you get a chance to check any of his comedy out?
I did. Yeah. I've checked it out on his social media. And then like even we had a book launch and he was on stage maybe like 5 minutes, but he cracked a few jokes. I brought a lot of my family with me. I'm Italian. And he made a joke that, oh, I know a lot of people are there listening to the Z1035 Euro mix on the way home. And it was so quick and funny. And it's like, he knows how to, he's so witty with it that he's very good. Like it's a great sense of humor.
It really is. So I want people to check out Eric and check out this book. Greg will thank you. Joseph will thank you. And Eric will really thank you because, you know, they all three, it was a labor of love for Eric. I want to emphasize, it's a look back at two wrestlers that probably most of you have never heard of. But on top of it, it's unsurprisingly moving book because of the circumstances of Danny Bullwhip Johnson's life and his relationship with his son and the grandfather that Eric never knew and never met him. And, you know, for Eric to discover all these things later on in his life, I think was a big deal for him.
Yeah, definitely. Like the way we tried to format the book was me and Greg would get like the nitty gritty information, the facts, like things that were like more to the point, the journalism aspect of it. And then we'd present that to Eric and let him put his own personal touch on it and like his own personal feelings. And I think that added so much to the book. It's an innovative way of doing it. You don't see that often. And it allowed for Eric to put his personal feelings into the book because there's things he like never heard or never knew. And stories that he got to hear for the first time that were just like his real emotion came out. And I think that's what made the book so special.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, I read a lot of wrestling books. I have authors on all the time. And I want you to know right now, as we sit here, this is my wrestling book of the year so far. Because it's out of left field. I actually got to see Bull Johnson work back in the 70s.
Wow. Okay.
I'm old enough to have seen him work and work a lot. He worked around the East a lot. So I got to see him. And to me, when I heard Greg told me he was doing a book on, Greg was on the show a few months ago and he told me he was doing a book on, I said, Bull Johnson? Because he was a prelim guy, basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is too good. I remember Bull Johnson because me and some friends used to get together and go to a bar in my hometown and watch the IWA wrestling. And Bull Johnson was on virtually every episode of that show.
I'm sure.
So it was like, my God, it's taking me back to my high school years. But not about Bruno Sammartino or Chief J Strongbow. No, it's about Bull Johnson. I said, I can't wait to read this book. So I'm so glad that Greg hooked me up with everybody here because it's like, this is a good piece of work, and I think it's entertaining, and I think people really need to read this. So I'm trying to hype this book because...
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's totally different, folks. This is not your usual, you know, let's say, breaking kayfabe biography. It's different. It's a personal story about what Eric's life has been through with the wrestling influence in his life. Mm-hmm. Imagine being the son and grandson of a professional wrestler. I can't even fathom that.
Yeah, like he grew up with Johnny Canine at his house practically. Like, and it's stories like that, like a little kid, like no idea who he's probably like at the time. He had no idea who the type of person he was talking to, but that's like one of the most notorious wrestling and gangsters of all time, criminal, whatever you want to call him. But mm-hmm. like a story, like so many things that from his childhood that he described it as a circus. And I think that's the best way to put it, is life was like a circus and then molded him into this amazing comedian today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He channeled his energies in a good, positive way, I think, you know?
Absolutely.
So anyway, now I got a 22-year-old guy here. And a few months ago, I had a 22-year-old young woman, Kimmy Sokol, on the show. And I relish moments like this because most of my guests are pretty much around my age frame, you know? Being a nostalgia podcast, we talk about stuff we did years ago and saw years ago. But I keep my eye on today's product. And we just talked about WWE. I want to talk about some indies and AEW right now. Because AEW has gone through these past few weeks one of the most embarrassing sequences. I mean, everybody's got the same opinion about bringing back the all-in backstage videotape that went nowhere and bombed royally, and it's not a good look. What do you think about all that?
I think AEW has the best roster in wrestling, with some of the worst like management and booking in wrestling. I think they have such a big roster that relies so much on their money that they don't know. It feels like they don't know what to do with everyone. And they keep finding people and bringing people in, but there's just no direction. I feel like with every single star, like I feel like people come in and then they have this big debut. They have a few crazy matches and then what happened to them? Where'd they go? And you don't hear from them for a while. I think the whole all-in situation, I think that was embarrassing, in my opinion, like for the company to have to air that on TV. I don't know. I feel like it just kind of proved like the whole what CM Punk said was true. If anything, I think they made him look better than they made Jack Perry look, whatever they're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. You said they had to show it. They didn't have to show it. This was somebody's idea. I think we both know whose idea it probably was. And it was a really bad idea. I mean, it went nowhere. It made no sense. And it only kind of verified, like you said, what CM Punk has been saying all along. So Tony Khan needs to be a bigger man and drop the whole damn thing about CM Punk. Just he's not on the roster anymore. He got released.
It's done.
And it's over. Just do your own thing.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I think AEW, there was a point, I think, where AEW was great. I think they were a very good wrestling show at one point. And I think it would be like 20, right around the pandemic, arguably enough. I think WWE had a little bit of a rough patch during the pandemic, but I think AEW kind of found their stride in that scenario. And I used to watch it religiously, like every week I would tune into Dynamite, but just felt like as they got bigger roster-wise, company-wise, the product took a dip. And I just think you can have every star in the world, but if you don't know how to book them, what's the point of paying all these people? And eventually the money's only going to get them so far. Like, if they're not filling arenas the way it is right now, I don't know how much longer they're going to last. A good friend of mine loves wrestling. I was telling him yesterday, like, I don't know if by next summer, AEW will still be a company. And that's a wonder I actually have, because I understand they have all this money to spend, but eventually you're going to have to realize you're not getting the return on income and move on with this, the idea. I just don't think it's working out the way they expected it to.
And you know, TV being TV, if TBS and TNT said it's enough, you know, shows do get canceled in the middle of a contract. I mean, that can happen. So we'll see. It just seems like a mess right now, you know. But you know, here's the other thing about modern. Well, I'll call it modern wrestling, today's wrestling. The strategy, the ring psychology in the matches has gone completely haywire. Too much stuff is repeated over and over. Like, even in WWE, does somebody have to go through a table on every edition of Raw? You know, the ringside table, the announcer's table.
Yeah.
Also, if someone is running to the ring to save someone else, why play the ring music and telegraph it? You see, it doesn't make logical. It's not logical. It doesn't make any sense.
At WrestleMania, the first, when Jey Uso came out to stop Jimmy, the first thing I said was, why is his music playing?
Right, exactly. I think everybody says that. It's illogical.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see him, folks, or WWE. We will see them. Yeah. We know who they are. When they attack, we'll know who they are. Mm-hmm. It's funny, too, because they have people coming out of the crowd, and they never get music when they do that. It's only when they run down the ramp. But you know what I'm saying? And also the spots, the high impact spots, let's say someone's standing up on the turn on the top turnbuckle.
Mm-hmm.
He's about to dive on three or four people who stand there for 40 seconds waiting to be dived upon. All of wrestling is guilty of that. And it's, you know, for a little ooh in the middle of a match, or a little excitement.
It's questionable.
It's telegraphing what's going on. To me, the suspension of disbelief is what made wrestling fun when I was younger. Some people actually believed the whole damn thing back when I was younger. If you can believe that, my friend, but it's true.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? It's like, you want to see, like Jim Cornette says, you want to see two people having a fight for a logical reason. And that action should look like a fight. And to me, too much of today's stuff does. Unless it is, of course, hardcore death matches, which I don't believe in at all. I a lot of people do, a lot of people enjoy them, but I'll just say this, I think today's wrestlers take too many risks. What do you think?
I agree. I think some wrestlers definitely take it a little too far. Like, the first person that just jumped into my head was Darby Allin.
Mm-hmm.
And how he puts his body on the line to like a way, like, this guy's not going to be able to walk in 10-15 years. And sometimes it's like the spots that people don't think are that bad that look just brutal. Like him taking that, I remember like the body slam from Christian on a pair of steel, like a set of steel steps.
Mm-hmm.
I know the steps aren't like solid steel or whatever, but still, like, he's taking it from like 6 feet in the air, dropping back first with no protection. Like, it's got to hurt. Even him holding onto that glass, the Sting last match, it served its purpose and like it gave the fans that crazy moment, but like, he's not going to be the same from something like that.
Well, I hear you. And there's another thing, too. I call it the superstar Billy Graham factor. Superstar Billy Graham had a bloodborne disease from bleeding in wrestling matches. You know. And I think a Canadian, Devin Nicholson, contracted hepatitis from blood-to-blood contact. And there's a lot of blood in AEW, and I worry that something like that might happen again. And it amazes me that people haven't learned from the experiences of guys who've gotten sick from blood contact. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think like blood kind of means nothing in AEW because it happens in every match.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm not against. I think bleeding in wrestling has its points. Like, I think it has to be I feel like if it's in a big moment, a culmination of a feud, like, okay, there's blood, that's whatever. Like, it adds to the story. If you're just bleeding on a random TV match with someone that you're fighting for the first time in like a year, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That risk. Like, something like it sticks in my mind, like Japan, like Japanese wrestling. I followed NJPW really closely, and they only you never see blood in their product. You saw blood when it's like a big match that's happening, like the culmination of a feud, like recently they did when Will Ospreay was leaving Japan, his faction United Empire faced the Bullet Club War Dogs in a steel cage match, the first cage match in Japan in years. And there was a lot of blood in that match. But because it doesn't happen ever in Japan, that match felt so much more like special, and it showed that these guys were really having their culmination. They hated each other. I think in that situation, it's okay because it adds something to the feud. But when it's just a random match, yeah, I completely agree. There's no need for that.
Right. You know, back in the day, and I hate to be an old man, but of course I am an old man, but that's another story. But blood was used quite a bit. If you looked at the magazine covers, they run like every other cover. It was a big selling point in the 70s and 80s. But when you actually went to your local arenas to see the regular cards, and back then there were regular cards every month or every couple of weeks, you wouldn't see blood on every card. Mm-hmm. You'd see it on every third or fourth card, which made it special, which made the fans feel like, hey, that villain is hurting my favorite wrestler. That's what blood was for. Mm-hmm. And not just to, I don't know, I don't understand the philosophy of blood in today's wrestling, in AEW particularly. Because like you said, everybody's bleeding like, ketchup packets. And I'm like, every match or every other match, it just feels that way.
It does. And it feels very unnecessary in a sense. And it's just kind of like they're doing it just to do it. It feels like they just want that pop of the blood. But after a while, like, you're not going to get those pops anymore if it's happening all the time.
But I think it's also another way of we're saying we're not WWE.
Yeah.
So, they had Cody Rhodes bleeding about three or four weeks ago, and that was rare for WWE television. I think when AEW started, their big selling point, we're not the WWE, we're hard hitting and all this other stuff. And I think that's where the blood use came from, really. They wanted to be so diametrically opposite to the what McMahon and company were doing that I think that was a big motivating factor in that regard.
Yeah, I think when it's like someone like John Moxley, like he really doesn't want to be Dean Ambrose anymore, so he bleeds in every match. But it's just like, mm-hmm. it just doesn't. I don't see a point to it anymore.
Yeah, most of us don't. So you're not alone. See, you're younger, but we have a very similar mindset here. It's like we want our wrestling to be hard hitting. We want it to be realistic, right? We want storylines that make sense.
Yeah,
good storyline will attract you.
Yeah. I think a storyline that I like, I'm a big fan of, like, I love the underdog story. I think everyone loves the underdog story in a sense, but mm-hmm. I think if it's done in a right way, and I think I like a longer story than a shorter story. Like, I think two of my favorite stories in wrestling in recent years, like arguably in all time, just because like the product I know, I just gave a lot to AEW. I talked bad about them quite a bit, but I think the Hangman Adam Page story was done perfectly. In the same sense, the way the Cody Rhodes story was done perfectly, where they took a year-long build, built him from like the odd man out, the one that would never be the champion, built him back up to the top, lost his friends along the way, but at the end of it, everyone came behind him to find him to become the champion. Like the way Jey Uso, The Undertaker, John Cena came to help Cody at WrestleMania, it was like when Hangman and the Young Bucks stood behind him and told him, hit Kenny Omega with the buckshot lariat, finish the job. And I think something like that is just a great story when you let someone build their underdog story, but it has to be a good amount of time. Like, I'm not believing, like, this might be an unpopular opinion. I didn't like the Sami Zayn story heading into WrestleMania because I thought they tried to build an underdog story in like 3 weeks. And I don't think Sami Zayn is the underdog people think he is anymore.
You know, you made a good point about the storyline. So I grew up watching a wrestling program, WWF, it was called way back when. And they would put on entire programs with no angles. The entire program, you can watch this stuff on Peacock, was squash matches. Yeah. Some shows had no main event, and it was simply to display the talents of the wrestlers against lesser wrestlers. And that's the way they, you know, they made people look strong and what have you, and built them up. There was a philosophy to how they booked on the East Coast in that, let's say a new heel would come in, and they always had a babyface champion, Bruno or Bob Backlund or Pedro Morales or whatever. So then a new heel would come in, and he would beat up a bunch of tomato cans, maybe have them carried out on stretchers and stuff like that. And then they would face a secondary face like Dominic DiNucci or Ivan Putski and beat them to earn a title shot. That was basically all the angles I watched for 5 years. That was it. That's how they handled it back then. And I know a lot of young people watch the stuff from back then and go, there's nothing going on. It's just a bunch of squash matches. But everything was very championship oriented back then. You know, the big prize, and there were very few belts.
Yeah.
You know, everything was territorial. So you had a champion and maybe a secondary champion and a tag team champion. And that was it for the entire organization. So everything in that regard, I almost wish once in a while they would put matches on that aren't angled at all.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have to be a rivalry going into every match. Just pit two even people, athletes against each other, be they men or women, and let them go. I got no problem with that. Well, you think that's...
Yeah, I think
to make it mild, or would that go over once in a while?
No, I think that's a great idea. I actually say this quite often as well, because I don't like when a wrestler comes back or they're trying to build a wrestler up and they just feed him local talent every week and have him squash him in like 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
A wrestler to come back and like work his way back to the top, like Sheamus returned to WWE on Monday Night Raw and he could have came back and just squashed somebody in 2 minutes. So they put him up against Ivar and he had like a 15-minute great match. Like they went back and forth. They seemed even two big guys hard hitting and it made him come back. He got the win and it made his win feel so much more convincing. Like he's ready to be back.
Mm-hmm.
If he beat up some random guy that no one's ever heard of in 2 minutes, what does that matter? Oh, he hit the bro. He can still hit his bro kick. Well, who cares? You see him against Ivar. He had a challenge in front of him and he was able to overcome that challenge. And I think they should keep doing that week by week until he eventually gets into a storyline, because that's going to make me care about him so much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just reintroduce him, so to speak, like you say.
Yeah.
You know, that makes sense. But I'm just saying, let's just throw, you know, forget titles and all that. Picture in WWE, and forget the bad guy, good guy thing. Just picture, let's throw Chad Gable in with AJ Styles. Just let him go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Just let him go without any buildup. These two, we're going to face these two guys off. But it seems like there's always got to be some type of backstage rigmarole, some kind of controversy, some kind of betrayal. Why not just let two guys go?
Yeah,
or two women go? I mean, you know what I'm saying? What do you think of that? I mean, just let them, put them in a ring and let them work.
Yeah, it'd be a great way to showcase some of the talent that maybe doesn't get utilized all the time and put them over with the fans. Like, they might be great talents, but they might not have the fan behind them. But a match like that would make people care. When you said that, it randomly stuck out to me. I remember, like, WrestleMania 24, they had the match where, like, there wasn't really any build to it. It was just kind of SmackDown versus Raw, Batista versus Umaga. There was no build to that match.
Right.
It kind of just went out there at WrestleMania, and they had a 20-minute great match because they were two even competitors, in my opinion. And you let them go, and it kind of just like, oh, you don't need a storyline for this match because it's just guys that can work. They're going to show you that they can work. What's the point of a storyline?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things they did in the old days that they don't do now. You never see a count-out victory.
Oh, never.
You never see a draw.
Very true.
A draw. They used to have draws on virtually every card. A 20-minute draw or a 15-minute draw. Just the bell rang. There was no decision. It's a draw. They'd raise both hands. Yeah, I think they'd riot if you did that now. Fans are not conditioned for that at all.
You don't see that a lot now.
No, you don't. And it's like, I kind of miss it. Because with a draw, you can highlight both guys and make them both look great.
That's, to go back to it again, that's what I love about New Japan because they do draws quite right.
Often. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what sets. I think New Japan's a company that's really set themselves, like they pride themselves on great wrestling, not so much storytelling, but great wrestling. And they do a great job with that. And every time they have the New Japan Cup every year, there's always a few draws in that tournament or the G1 Climax. And those draws are always just fantastic matches that get to showcase two guys that can go and they maybe don't get the spotlight that they always deserve. But in that match for 30 minutes, they're beating the hell out of each other. And there's no winner, but they both came out of that match 10 times stronger than when they went in.
Yep. New Japan is the most sports-oriented, I think, organization out there in the whole world. I mean, it's been around forever, and it's retained their own flavor all these years. Even though it's fancier and more colorful, It's still a very sports-minded group there. And I hope they never change because they're very singular in what they do. You know, there's not a lot of people like them.
Yeah, I think we're getting a revamp in New Japan right now. Like, it's kind of, we're seeing a new era kind of be ushered in. And I think we're in for a new look in New Japan, but I think they're still keeping their same idea, like the sports oriented. That's what I love. But we're seeing new stars, new young guys coming in. I think it's going to be a fun company to watch in the near future.
Well, Joseph, let me tell you something. You know your stuff, kiddo. I mean, it's very refreshing to speak to you. And, I'm impressed with your wealth of knowledge for somebody so young. It seems like you got your finger on the pulse. Where do you see yourself in a decade? What would you like to be doing?
I love writing. I want to be able to write forever. Like, that's something I want to do for a long time. I enjoy it. I think, not to toot my own horn, but I think I'm pretty good at it. And I love it. Like, whether it be any type, like I love writing about wrestling. That's something I always want to do. I want to write about sports. I want to write about I love even just covering the news. Like, I'm a journalist at heart, and it's what I love to do. And I hope I can find my way into an outlet, a newspaper, online call, anything that can will allow me to write. Because if I can write and make a living out of it, that's like my dream. That's exactly what I want.
Well, let me tell you something, my friend. I'm very impressed with you. And if a schmo like me could be a writer and editor for over 40 years, you can do it. You can definitely do it, man. Because I've read your stuff now, and I'm so impressed with you. And I'm glad that Greg pointed me your way, because the book is fabulous, and that's a heck of a way to get started in this whole wrestling thing. And I hope you stick with wrestling too. We need more journalists out there in wrestling. I mean, real journalists who want to cover the meat and potato stuff. And it would be kind of cool if you continue on with the ring stuff. I like that.
I hope so. I love wrestling. I loved wrestling since I was 4 years old. And I want to be able to, if I can combine that with my work, that's something that I'll always be passionate about. So if I can find a way to do that forever, it'd be definitely in my cards.
Very good. Well, I'll tell you what. This is Joseph Casciato. And would you come back to the show sometime?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is great.
No, seriously, I would love to have you back. We'll talk about other things that aren't, you know, we'll see you in a couple of months and check in with you and find out what's going on. And we'll talk about maybe some stuff that's in the news. How's that sound?
That sounds great. I would love it.
Folks, this is Joseph Casciato. The book is Run with the Bull, Three Generations for Sports and Entertainment. And it's all about Eric Johnson's life in wrestling. And now we're going to discover Joseph Casciato's life in wrestling, and it's a very exciting thing to watch. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
This is Joe Walsh. One thing I do when I'm not playing rock and roll is get on the air as an amateur radio operator. Also called ham radio is a communication service provided by ordinary people just like you and me. We have a national emergency communication system in place 24/7, 365. Find out more about amateur radio at arrl.org/whatisham radio. See you on the air.
You know why I like doing shows like this? It takes me back to when I was with Pro Wrestling Illustrated and writing the introducing features in the Wrestler magazine. So many young stars I got to deal with. Now, not that long ago, I introduced you all to Tyler Peters on this show. I introduced you to the young Kimmy Sokol on this show, two people that I think have great futures in wrestling. And now it's Joseph Casciato, who I think is going to have a tremendous future as both the writer And if he sticks with wrestling, something wrestling involved. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch them all develop and continue to move on in their lives in wrestling. I hope they all do as good or better than I was lucky enough to do. So that's it for this one. I love Canada. I love Canada. I really do. And I'm grateful for everybody up there in the Great White North who listens to us every week. There's more than a few of you, and I want to give you my appreciation for that. It's really special to me. OutdatedWrestlingHour.buzzsprout.com is our website where you can hear every episode. We have the Outdated Wrestling Hour fan club where a nominal fee you can get involved with this silly thing and help keep us on the podcast waves, as it were, and just keep the show going. So if you'd like to join, all the information is outdatedwrestlinghour.buzzsprout.com. Write to us at outdatedwrestling@gmail.com. We have a new show, the Outdated Entertainment Hour. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. There's a teaser episode up right now. Just look for it wherever you get your podcasts. Well, actually, right now, just go to Spotify or the website. Go to either Spotify, because I'm not sure what networks we'll have up. We'll have all of them just like with this show, but it takes some time. So for now, we're on Spotify and a new website, Outdated Entertainment Hour, does.buzzsprout.com. That's Outdated Entertainment Hour.buzzsprout.com. If you'd like to hear some talk about something other than wrestling, we'll be there at least monthly to begin. And I'm really looking forward to making that show develop, just like we did this one. And we wouldn't have developed any of these shows if it wasn't for you guys out there. Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to the program every single week. Find us on Facebook. I'm the one singing with BB King. Find me on Twitter if you can. Bob Smith is a really simple name, but you should be able to find me. I'm the old long-haired rascal in a little round photo. You know what I'm saying? So in any event, we hope you really like this show. We hope you liked the comedy show last time, and we hope you like every show moving forward of the Outdated Wrestling Hour. It's a thrill to put it together, and we got a lot of cool stuff coming up, some stuff you may not expect in the next several months. So hang with us if you would. My name is Bob Smith. Thank you for being here. And like one of my musical heroes, Ringo Starr, always says, peace and love, brothers and sisters.